Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to episode 2 of My Favourite Takeaway, the show for people who love food but can't always be bothered to cook it. I'm Tom Crane, and with me is...
Simran Shah, that's me. Hello, Tom. Hi.
How are you, Sim? Are you well?
I'm good. Tom, how has your week been?
I've had a good week. I went back to see my mum, which was nice. One of the effects of recording this show has been that I have put on quite a lot of weight, basically. If you do a job where the main thing, your main focus is eating takeaway food, it does have a bit of an effect, especially if you're not sort of moving your body at any pace at any other time. But over the last few weeks, I thought, okay, I'm going to sort this out. I'm gonna lose a bit of weight. I turned up, I see my mum, haven't seen her for 4 months. She looks at me and says, oh, you look good. You've lost all your double chins. All your double chins. Which felt a bit brutal. I don't even think you need a collective. And how's your week been, Sim? What have you been up to?
Tom, I'm not going to lie, I've been looking at myself a lot. Not in the mirror, like you might have been, but more at the picture of me on the graphic that is the logo for this podcast. Because Basically, it's two different images of me put together. Because
you need to explain. You need to explain this.
Okay, so I sent our graphic designer two images, and one where my legs look pretty good, right? And then one where
you were entirely naked, and the other one where you were wearing clothes.
And one where my face looks good, right? So I sent these two images, one where my bottom half looks good, and the other where my top half looks good. But obviously, I've not sent one where I look good just as a whole. So what he did, because I wasn't happy with my face in one and my legs in the other, is our amazing graphics guy decided just to combine them together. He then also said, well, do you guys want to be sort of, you know, of equal height? So he has I've been slightly stretched in the image.
Because what listeners won't know is that Simran is actually 2'2", and
I'm certainly not as tall as you are, and I also do look a touch paler in the image. And then a friend of mine looked at it and said, oh god, you look really good looking. Like that's some sort of surprise. I'm now taller and paler. I'm now been looking. So I suppose what I'm saying is, if you meet me in real life, I might look a bit different. And essentially, Crane, I think I've basically been catfishing the audience.
It's like basically that game you do at Christmas where you draw a head, you fold it, you add in a body, you fold it, and then you've got like lizard legs, that sort of thing. It's basically what it is. It's that sort of that Christmas game. It's a lie. But you look great in that lie, so don't worry about it. It's a good thing.
It's fine. It's fine. I'm happy with it.
I'll tell you one thing you should be happy about, Sim, is the lovely, lovely messages we've been receiving about episode one. It's means so much to us that you've been listening and that you've enjoyed it. Very, very touched by the kind things you've written to us. And we've also had some great sort of feedback, haven't we? Some correspondence,
I think we'll tuck into. Stuff.
Each week we want to tuck into the stuff that you send us, your stories and stuff. Josh Whittaker not going for rice with a curry was quite a hot topic.
I was surprised at how many people also didn't have rice with their curry. So it wasn't as controversial. It's still a controversial move, sure, but it's also quite a popular one. We had lots of people sending us messages that they agree with Josh and they want to feel a bit sexy on a night out so they don't eat the curry with the rice.
Well, I'll tell you some of the examples. Peter, from London, quite vague, said, my view is that rice should only come if it's integral to the dish, like with a biryani. I think it's quite hard to tell if it's integral, though, isn't it? I mean, I think, for me, the rice acts as a conduit. It's a good base for things. So rice is integral to a lot of things, whether it's kind of part of the dish or not. So I'm not sure about that, but I appreciate the point of view. Ria has said that I'm all about no rice with an Indian takeaway. I also tend to get onion bhaji and a Peshwari naan for the curry my boyfriend chooses. And I take half of the sauce for dipping and he eats all the meat and the rest of the sauce, which is, I think, one of the most complicated arrangements I've ever read for takeaways. So I only eat with my right hand. It has to be sundown. My boyfriend only orders curries that start with a K, and then we just settle down and have a nice time. We've also had a comment here, which I think is worth reading out. This is a bit more stark. He said, I'm craving an Indian now after listening to that. This is from Sweet Meat Jane, who says, I'll be getting rice and naan, though, because I'm not a maniac. A maniac. That's what a slam for Whittaker. There we are. We've also had some correspondence in terms of stories and stuff and your sort of weird things that you do and sort of takeaway disasters. Sim, do you want to kick us off with some of the stuff that we've been sent in?
Yeah, we've had a few of these come in. So we had one from Maz, also somewhere in London, and he starts his with a very bold statement. I love pizza, but I hate a pizza takeaway. Okay, wrong podcast to listen to, but fine. Yeah.
Just to let you know, this show is not for me. Love, Maz. he says, I will not be listening again. Love, Maz.
So he says, it arrives cold and you always have to put it in the oven for a few minutes, further delaying the meal. Then the crusts become incredibly difficult to eat because it's so stale. What I do now is he drives to pick up the pizza and then on his way home, he eats the pizza whilst driving. He says, sure, it's tricky, but it's worth it. I've ruined a pair of new shorts, two t-shirts, and so far my partner thinks I'm an idiot, but she's the idiot because she dips a crust in mayonnaise. Garlic herb dip all the way. Always need more than one tub of garlic and herb dip, and they shouldn't charge me for it. It should be for free. That's Maz's view.
But I'm not sure about that. For me, like, the pleasure is stopping and enjoying the pizza, not sort of combining it with a situation where you're having to sort of, you know, keep yourself safe and focused and alive, essentially.
I like there to be slightly less jeopardy when I eat my pizza, you know what I mean? It's not a thing that I'm looking for.
Also, it's going to be too hot on your lap as well. This doesn't feel safe.
Where are you putting the pizza? On your lap? And then you've got your hands on the wheel, then with the slides of the pizza dangling.
And what you do is you're lying the pizza across the steering wheel, because, of course, it's the perfect circle. And then you're eating the slices as you go along. And by the time you put into your driveway, you can see your steering wheel again. And the dip goes on the horn. It's perfect. Actually, I'm back with it, Maz. It's a great idea. In general, though, we do want your stories of sort of, like, you know, weird things you're into and takeaway disasters. Takeaway disasters is a good area. I'll tell you one little story. Here's an example of something that happened to me. I live about a mile from a place called World's Best Kebab in Stoke Newington. And on a Thursday evening a few months ago, I decided at 6 o'clock I was going to get a kebab. So because I was so lazy, I decided to get a taxi to this kebab shop, and the taxi turned up and I was too embarrassed to admit to the taxi driver I was off to get a kebab at 6 o'clock on a Thursday. So I claimed to him I was off to meet friends in a nice restaurant for a meal.
That is so sad. Lame.
It gets worse. He drops me off. I walk down the road, checking he's gone away. I go into World's Best Kebab. I get my kebab. They put it in a bag that says World's Best Kebab on it. I leave. I order another cab, and the same guy picks me up.
So what did you do when the same guy picked you up? What did you do? I mean, that level of shame and embarrassment. What are you saying to him?
Well, I chose to put my headphones on and just... I couldn't deal with it. So I put my headphones on and I just sort of stared out of the window and I thought, look, it's only a mile away. I'll be back in my front room in 4 minutes. So I can ride this out. Painful, painful, painful. But the point is, have you suffered humiliation like that? Have you had any takeaway disasters? Have the wrong things turned up? Have awful things happened? Are there any weird things you order? And we just basically want to hear the bizarre stuff that you takeaway lovers enjoy or have experienced in life. And if you want to get in contact with the show, here's how.
You can follow us on Insta on My Favorite Takeaway Podcast, on Twitter on Fav Takeaway Pod, or email us hello@myfavoritetakeawaypodcast.com. Right, it's time for our guests, Andy and Makita Oliver, and we joined them in their home in East London, where we ate some very lovely Wadadley food sat round their table. We had so much fun making this. Here it is.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We should probably set the scene. We are sat in Andy's beautiful flat in front of enough food for about 7,000
people. 7,000
people? It looks amazing.
Not my family.
And Makita is sat in the most sort of like luxuriating low seat. It's so chilled. It's great.
It's more like a throne, I'd say.
Yeah. a very chilled place.
And the incredible food we have in front of us is from your new takeaway venture.
Yes.
So tell us what's in front of us.
So this is from Wadadley Kitchen. This is Wadadley Deliveries.
Yes.
Wadadley is the indigenous Taino Indian name for Antigua, and that's where our family come from. So our heritage is Antiguan.
So is this
heritage.
Antiguan food then?
This is kind of pan-Caribbean food. This is my iteration of food that I have grown up eating. So it's not cheap. Like, this is curry goat loaded fries. You don't normally get curry goat on fries. Also, this is chocolate curry goat. And so normally we get curry goat with rice and peas or with plain rice, but we've been loading it with fries. I do it with rice as well. It's like all of the ingredients that I grew up eating and all the flavours that I grew up around, but we're doing other things with them as well as doing traditional things.
So take us through the other plates then. So
right,
what else
so
we got for us?
Chocolate curry goat loaded fries. This is an escovitch pickle, and an escovitch pickle is like an escabeche, which is a Portuguese pickle.
Yes.
One of the interesting things about Caribbean food is that people think that it's a very narrow kind of, there's jerk chicken, there's rice food. But actually, what's interesting about the Caribbean is everybody's been through the Caribbean. Curry didn't really get there until slavery ended, and then in indentured Indian workers came and brought curry cooking and curry technique to the Caribbean. Before that, it was more African and South American kind of stuff. The word barbecue is a Caribbean word. It comes from the Taino Indian people who are indigenous to Antigua, Barbacoa, and then they took that back to Latin America, and then that went to America.
So is that where it kind of started then, with the idea of barbecuing?
The word in barbecue,
the first people to cook in
the ground with smoke and fire and call it barbecue. Were
Caribbean. We only found that out last year, didn't we?
We only just found that out, and I love it.
Okay.
Got fried plantain.
Amazing.
We've got, these are what we do in, this is double fried aubergine, sticky orange and ginger aubergine.
Ooh.
And then we've got orange and ginger wings. We've got some tamarind barbecued chicken thighs. This is a chocolate curried umami mushroom.
I thought that's what it was. Yeah, I could tell.
You looked at that and thought that
was
like
umami mushroom. Not that again, I thought.
Yeah. Sweet potato roti, cocoa bread, green slaw, and then we've got mac and cheese. And then we've got homemade hot sauce. And this is Scotch bonnet salt.
I mean, that's an amazing platter. And one of the things you pick up on when you look at this is how it's an amazing mixture of sweetness and spice and heat. And
that feels like
it's such a great, you know, it's just a great flavour.
I just think it should be invigorating.
Completely.
Kind of wake you up and, you know, there should be a party in your mouth.
Well, should we try some of this?
Let's eat some food because it's all going cold at these aubergines have gone cold.
It seems to be a bit of sort of, that's quite Asian aspect, the aubergine like
orange
that.
Orange and ginger.
Yeah.
Ginger, oranges, we really grow, there's a lot of oranges, a lot of citrus in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And I had a thing with jerk where I loved her, but a lot of the time it can get a bit muddy.
Yeah.
And I just felt like it needed brightening up, so I added orange,
yes,
loads of citrus, oranges and lemon and ginger and all sorts of stuff to the basic jerk seasoning. We just came up with these orange and ginger sticky wings, basically. That's an aubergine version of the wings that we've got there.
Andy, yes. Do you think, like, there's Indian food, as I would know?
Yeah.
It's got on really,
here,
really...
Here, have some planting, babe.
Okay, fantastic.
It's a big part of the English cuisine, but
yeah.
Caribbean food, Pangaean food, never quite done it in the same way.
No, it's very interesting to me, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to start with Dadley, because I feel like often you get Caribbean food and it's really disappointing. You go out and you think, oh, I'm going to get this, it's going to be great, and then you get it and it's like the really rubbish bit of dirt chicken, it's dry, the rice isn't cooked properly, the sides aren't quite right, and it's just a bit disappointing.
Completely.
So I was like, this is how we cook at home. This is like real Caribbean home cooking.
Why do you think that is? That sometimes it can be a bit.
I just think that it's one of those things that hasn't translated. We just haven't translated it to restaurants because in Indian cuisine they changed up Indian food to make it suit an English palate.
Essentially,
we just never did that with Caribbean food.
Sort of food.
Yeah, and Caribbean people are funny. People don't really like you to mess around with the food. I had to talk to somebody for about 2 hours at one of our pop-ups about why the curry goat was on fries.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And where
really?
Was the rice? Yes,
was that a fun conversation?
It was. No, it was
so they had actually. They had a problem with the idea of it, didn't they?
Yes, completely. She was going, but we have to hold on to the old ways, and I agree with her. But I also think that you have to let me sing my song.
Yeah. That's so true. Because so much about food is about expression.
Yes, and you have to be able to do it how you want to do it. But interestingly, I think for migrant peoples, the food that we eat and the old school recipes are such a deep part of our identity that people feel that. I mean, try mucking around with the pasta and see what happens.
Yeah,
It's like, I think people that have been poor and have moved around, we hold on to our food because it tells us who we are. Yeah. It's our history, and the recipes have been handed down through generation and generation.
Yeah.
So people start to feel displaced.
Yes.
And like they're going to lose something if you start doing things differently. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think you can do both.
That said, why have you put curry goat on chips? Just to
because chips and gravy is always good.
Yeah, there you are.
Because
your
wet chips. What's wrong with wet chips? You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
okay, let's try this.
That's great, right?
That is really good.
It's unbelievably good.
It's delicious, right? So it's not too hot. Oh, sweet. Do you like things hot?
Yes, I like that.
This is the homemade hot sauce, roasted chili hot sauce. So it's roasted Scotch bonnet hot sauce.
How are you with heat, Makita? Are you?
Yeah, I love it. I gave myself gastritis once from drinking
she
too
collapsed
much chili
in the
oil.
I had to take her to the hospital. She collapsed in the street, and the doctor said, "Have you been eating a lot of chili?" And I went, "I told you." Bloody chili oil. So, yeah, I do. I love heat.
So, were you drinking it neat?
Yeah. No, I got really into it on everything, and then I was starting to eat it with a teaspoon, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a problem in that I live in a split, spice-tolerant household. So, my girlfriend and her mum, they're wimps.
Right.
So, but I have to come down. There's no way they can come up to to spice. So I end up having to sort of bland everything down, but I absolutely love it.
But
it's a tricky thing.
So, yeah, I think the thing is to always put the spice on the side.
Because then everybody can do whatever they want.
But for instance,
I love Szechuanese food. I'm a huge fan of that. Stuff like Szechuan peppercorns, these sort of things. I love that
numbing
flavour. Yeah, it is. And that's just basically
not
possible.
That's not happening in your house.
So growing up then, did you have takeaways much growing up? And what was your childhood and was it...
No, we never had takeaways. I'm thinking about it now. No, what we did is... my mum was like making the food, so we didn't really like. For instance, my mum.
Also, we didn't have any money.
Yeah, we didn't have any money.
We were really skint. Takeaways are quite expensive.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, we'd go to the chip shop.
Yeah. There was a chip shop down the end of my road, and that's probably
where. I know where we used to go when I had some money. Rotisserie Jewels.
Oh yeah. There was a Rotisserie Jewels by my primary school in Notting Hill Gate. I swear the only one that's ever been in London. And do you remember Rotisserie Jewels?
Was it like a chain?
There's like four things on the menu, and it's just rotisserie chickens, potato dauphinois, potatoes, and then what was the green?
I don't know.
Oh, broccoli.
Was there something green?
I remember
the chicken and the potato.
Yeah, we were like, so yeah, whenever we got a bit of money,
we'd go to Rotisserie Jewels. And what we're talking about, and of course, Spudgy like.
Oh,
Spudgy. I do now. Spudgy like, I know.
We used to love a sour cream.
Is that a jacket potato?
Yeah, fast food restaurant.
That was a great idea. What happened to Spudgy like? I would go there now.
Totally. Me and Mum love a baked potato.
We love a baked potato.
But also, bibs.
Does it not exist anymore, Spud You Like.
No.
There's one. There was one in Westfield.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Really weird. There was one in Westfield in Stratford. I was like, oh, my
Who
God, there's a Spud
Midway
You Like.
Through a shopping trip. You know, yeah. I fancy a really you heavy chocolate potato.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. Extra butter, damn right.
Yeah, we did.
Okay. Keep putting it in. Don't be shy,
yeah.
Karen.
But, yeah, yeah, but my mum used to cook at the where my mum met my stepdad is a club in West London called The Globe, and Garfield used to run it, and mum was doing the food. Mum made the chicken. So there was not really time for takeaway because mum was usually catering something. Mm.
Yeah,
it was just food
true.
Everywhere, really.
I didn't have any takeaways growing up either. But about once a year, we go to a place called the Fat Fryer, which is a fish and chip place at the bottom of the road, and that was basically it. And I think that's why I've got this sort of fascination with it
with
now. Because when I got to had my first job and I was like 21 or whatever it happens to be after uni, I could actually afford occasionally to get something, so it felt so exciting,
right,
this new world of stuff I was able to sort of try, and all these things that I'd never really tried before because it's just not what I grew up around. But as you living with someone who is just, you know, is a professional cook, I mean, why would you? Yeah, I suppose it completely makes sense.
I think I rebelled as well. I think in my 20s I lived on a lot of takeaways.
Did you?
Yeah, I wasn't really cooking.
Okay.
And
you used to get pasta takeaways from the calf.
Oh my God, that was good. That carbonara from Camden.
Not cooked with cream, I hope, because I've got a real issue with anyone who cooks carbonara with cream.
No, I don't think so. They were proper.
It was a really proper little. You know, on the corner on Parkway.
But you know what? I went past the other day and I was like, I wonder if they still do the carbonara. I used to get extra sauce and extra cheese.
We do the same.
The picture you're painting of your 20s sounds very takeaway based, fast food based.
Very carb heavy.
Very carb heavy.
It doesn't sound like. Also, I've never heard in a sort of top class Italian restaurant someone say, "Can I get extra sauce?" As well. The sort of thing you say
with
it.
It was a calf. She's always loved a calf.
I have always loved
a bit like Ippolici sort of vibe on in Beth
Abraham. Yeah, exactly.
Do you know? I remember finding out about calves.
Yeah,
right. I didn't know calves existed until I was about 16.
Oh my God!
Really?
No, because I grew up in Bury. There was only like two, and I'd never been down that road.
I
walked down the road with these people, and I was like, "What's that? What's this place?" And they went, "It's a calf." I was like, "What do you mean?" They were going, "You know, it's like a calf." I was like, "What's a calf? I don't understand." Because we have Caribbean families a lot. Like my dad and like Garfield, my partner said they don't eat what they call outside food.
Yeah,
they only eat Caribbean food. My mum and dad were. My mum would cook food from all over the place, but they just don't go. We never used to go out for dinner and stuff. We didn't.
They're called big
trust
food.
It. Big food. Outside funny people food.
Foreign food outside.
I'm not being funny. They didn't trust a lot of English people in kitchens. They were a bit like.
Also, this was England in the 70s.
It was England in the 70s. And it wasn't like they were like, you know, amazing. Oh, let's go to the, you know, wonderful high cafe. We're in Bury St Edmunds. It's the 1970s. So I went into this place, this magical place with these people. And we sat down and I was like, hang on a minute. Are you telling me you can get a roast dinner every day?
Yeah.
They were like, you could just order it. I was like, what? Yeah. How has nobody told me about this before?
And Mum, you must have been so excited about like.
I was like, I'll take
chip.
Roast chicken, roast potatoes, and some extra gravy. And they brought it to me like that. And it blew my mind.
So when you came to London, did your food habits change? Did your cuisine change? Like, what was there anything in London that sort of started inspiring you that was outside of Caribbean?
There used to be on Ridley Road. There used to be this place called the Cowboy, and it was a food van that did baguettes with sausages or bacon and fried eggs in the baguette. And I didn't have any money, so my cousins would send me to the Cowboy at 4 a.m. on the bike to go and get, because everybody was stoned. I mean, let's just face it was the. What was happening?
Yeah.
Real stone, and I didn't have any money, so I wanted a cowboy, obviously, because I had really bad munchies. And they went,
That's literally the only time you got one of those.
Cowboy, you have to go and get them. So I would go out on the bike down Ridley Road. We used to live on Southgate Road. I'd go out down at Ridley, and there was the Cowboy. It was like right opposite where the Dalston train station is.
Okay, yeah.
And get like, you know, 10 cowboys and bring them back in a bag.
So Ridley Road, this is Ridley Road Market.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not too far from here.
Yeah, it's just on the road. Yeah, Dalston.
Has it changed much? Because you go past Ridley Road Market and sometimes you think it hasn't
changed
much.
It's changed a bit.
Well,
yeah, but I mean, not that much. It's doing quite well.
It's doing quite well considering what's happened around it. But I am worried about it as well. And I actually really, from the bottom of my heart, would be a little bit at the end of my tether with Hackney if they homogenise and turn Ridley Road Market into what they are desperately trying to
do
at the
Brixton Market. I don't want them to do that.
What do you think they're trying to do?
Get rid of all the independent stalls and just get stores. You know, just completely taking all the spirit and, I don't know, heritage. It's a real part. It's like real heart of that part of town, and without it, it really will feel very, very different.
Imagine,
it's the same old story. People think that they, let's get rid of that, and then they realise that the area is not what they moved to. Like, it won't be the same if that market goes really full stop.
It's the same with Brixton Market. I lived in Brixton for 8 years, and when I moved there first, because my uncle lived there for 30 years, an Indian family, we're all very close. And Brixton Market was basically, I'd say there was about maybe 10 or 12 retailers in the market that were all selling suitcases.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Suitcases and, like, you know, clothes hangers
and
stuff.
I love those places.
Don't forget the doilies.
Yeah, and the doilies.
Big on doilies.
Big on doilies, like all of that. Now there's one of them.
Yeah, I see.
And that's not going to last very long.
I can't bear it. I literally can't bear it.
And that's the culture. That's the character of the place.
The other day we went to Ridley on her birthday, and there were people coming here for dinner, a couple of people were coming over for lunch, and I was like, I need some new doilies. Okay. I had to go to 3 shops. I was like, got the doilies? He said, no. I was like, what do you mean?
By the time we went to the third pound shop and there was no doilies, my mum was like, what is going on in the area?
To kick off. Yeah. And we got to the third one, he went, yeah, I've got doilies. I was like, oh, good. You're lucky.
I don't need to go to prison now.
Now I don't have to go to jail. Because I was about to kick off.
What are you in for? I killed a man because he didn't have doilies.
Killed a man because he didn't have doilies.
But I have to say, it's like, it's not just about a doily. It starts with
doilies. No, it starts with doilies.
And then suddenly, there's no Bosman shop.
I mean, you know, I was in... this is a really mean
it's
story.
It's a gateway problem, the doily.
I was in the market, this was last year, and it was just very funny, and everybody was laughing, because there was this girl, she's a perfectly nice girl, but she was buying a mango from this man, and everybody was trying to buy some fruit off the guy, and she was like... He was like, what would you like? She said, I'd like a mango. And he was like... And she went... I had a lot of mango. I was in India, my gap year. I was having a mango every day. I mean, they're just delicious. I was in India. Where are your family from?
No.
And he was asking, and the guy's looking at her like, what?
Yeah.
And there's like me and 3 other women trying to wait to buy the mango and come out of the way. Yeah. Nobody cares about your gap year.
Also, but can I say one thing? There's only actually one mango, which is the Alfonso mango. No point getting any other fucking
don't
mangoes.
Buy any dry.
So what's the point of eating mangoes all year? Right? I don't know what you're doing.
Need sweet mango season.
Is the Alfonso mango?
It's the best mango.
It's the best mango. There is some debate.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm on the Alfonso team.
I really regret not naming my son Alfonso Mango. It's quite nice. My fruit fascination. Who is buying a full watermelon and how are they getting it home? That's the thing that I find.
I will buy.
Do you roll it home? How does it work?
I will buy a full watermelon.
Do you? You're the person.
I do lots of things with it.
I mean, I love watermelon, but I buy in a segment.
Pickle it, you can pickle the rind.
I'm listening.
Put it in salads.
Yeah.
Put it in salads. You can make dressings with it. Make watermelon juice. You can pickle the rind. You can pickle the flesh. You can have it with feta. You can do all.
You've got to get the thing home. That's the problem, and it's the size of a baby.
Yeah, you're chucking back
the car.
I don't drive. I fail 5 times. That's
five.
The problem.
Five. Maybe more than you.
How many
times? These are people.
But have you passed?
No.
Oh, great.
I took the test before I was ready. All and right. that also, the first time I tried to drive was when we went on this, we did a TV show all around Southeast Asia for the BBC, and we were going on a car rally.
Oh, yes.
And they were like, can Mickey, you drive? I was like, no. So they were like, okay, you need to learn. So I was learning with this, like, you don't have much time. Mm. You have to pass first time. I was like, you're kidding me. Wow. So that was a really hard way to learn. Then I didn't pass and Mum had to do all the driving.
Really?
But then also when we got there, I realised I wouldn't have let her drive anyway because it was really scary.
Yeah,
I mean, Thailand was okay. Vietnam.
New driver on the Vietnam
was
road.
Okay. No, Cambodia, they drive at you on the wrong side of the road at night with the lights off. You just
are you sure
get
you weren't on the wrong side of the road?
No, I wasn't. Honestly, I
had that problem in France.
Good driver.
I was doing 10 hours a day. We won the Endurance Buddha Prize.
Did you?
Yeah, we did, actually.
From where to where, sorry? From Thailand to Vietnam.
To Ho Chi Minh.
To Ho Chi Minh City.
That's a lot of snacks you got for that drive.
Oh, we had a big
snack.
What kind of snacks were you doing?
Well,
what was the snack game?
The best snack we found was a woman on the side of the road. I guess their version of like a little chef.
It was
just not. But it's like a family. I think we were in Vietnam. and they were these like buttermilk coconut pancakes.
Oh, but they were like, but they were like,
you know, suddenly those, big smile on his
you know
face.
Those little round level. Danish pancakes.
Yes, yeah, yeah,
they
yeah,
were
yeah.
like oh, yeah, that. Yeah, yeah. But they were made with coconut milk.
Yeah.
And they were the most... We literally had them. We were like, what is this?
What is this magic
happening in my face? It was amazing. What is happening in my
face? To the point where it was like 50 degrees and we took 20 of them and stuck them in a sweaty bag. Like, yeah. In the back of the car. They're not going to be nice.
We
don't care. I need more.
So, Makita, I'm going to tell you something which is probably going to make you feel better about the way you failed your driving test. Now, this is awful and I can't believe I'm saying it in polite company. One of my driving tests, I failed because I had food poisoning and the emergency stop made me shit myself.
Oh, my God!
Well, I don't know if that's on the form, is it? I mean, what did they tick?
It's a major.
What did they tick? That's called an urgent incontinence, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, the emergency stop made you shit yourself.
Did you, well, why did you not tell? Why didn't you just pretend you hadn't?
But not, I'll be honest, my mind went after that. It was kind of, yeah, there was... He didn't tick a box that said you shat yourself. But after, it's hard
but
to stay in the game.
Knew.
Yeah, yeah. We knew I something was up. I no amount of winding better. Down the windows is going to change that. Anyway, on to the next course.
No, but thank you, Tom. I do feel better.
So, well, yeah. What a story to segue into next food. But right. let's move through the meal. What would you like
so
to
So now out? You need the breads or the sweet potato or the sweet potato roti.
Okay.
Because really what you should do... Can you get the butter dish, Keith?
I did, it here.
I'm talking of carb stuff. There's mac and cheese.
There's a bit of mac and cheese. And the mac and cheese you always make with evaporated milk.
I always think the mac and cheese is a bit of a... feels like a weird addition.
Oh, no, you have to have Caribbean food, mac and cheese. I don't know, we just love
so
it.
What's up, yeah, so kind of, what's up with that?
I think it's the American thing.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, when I was a kid, I used to think that boxed macaroni cheese was really glamorous.
Yeah, yeah.
That weird yellow stuff in a box.
I thought that was very glamorous.
I'm going to make you a chicken cocoa bread. Hang on. Look.
Oh, fantastic.
Pass that knife, please. So you see there, like, see, you can see it's like sort of quite moist in there.
No.
So this is the tamarind chicken.
Yep.
And we're putting it into the cocoa bread.
Fantastic.
Because, you know, why wouldn't you?
As a chef, do you bother cooking for yourself?
Yes,
normally
I do.
On an evening, do you get, you just like, I can't be bothered?
No, I make myself good food all the time.
She does, you may as well.
Here, have some Escovitch pickle in there. That'll fantastic. Make you happy, babe. I think that it takes just as long to make yourself something crap as it does to make yourself something nice. You may as well make yourself something nice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Why would you eat rubbish if you can eat something nice? I don't really understand the... You could put a bit of slaw in there as well if you fancied it.
And you've worked in, you know, you've worked with some seriously big chefs. Is there anything that you've like that you would have taken from like say traditional French cuisine or whatever? And have you ever been tempted to incorporate stuff, or have you always been quite a purist with Caribbean?
I am not trained in like French cooking, like, you know, fancy French cooking at all, or Italian traditions or any of those things. I'm a completely self-taught cook anyway. I think that magic does happen when you bring the best things of every cuisine together. Do you know what I mean? Like, so on Great British Menu, when you get
so
a chef...
so good, by the way.
Is
sorry.
That really good? With the estimate.
It's really nice.
It's just unbelievable. And really the coleslaw,
there's
I love
green
that.
Soy. It's nice. You see, because I have a thing, I don't like coleslaw because I don't like too much mayonnaise-y gloop.
Yes, yeah.
So we use a lot of lime and it's more like a vinaigrette. So, yeah, to bring some acidity on there as
it's
well.
Really, really works.
I mean? So, like, one of my... There's a chef called Kim Ratcher-Rowan who was on this... series of Great British Menu. I think her family are Thai heritage, and she cooks with Gordon Ramsay. She brings together traditional French classicism and Thai classicism, and those two things, you know, it's just a magical, incredible thing.
Yeah.
So the level that she's cooking at is quite exceptional and quite amazing, and I do think that is a thing of great beauty when you bring those things together. We do bring in other flavours. Like you said, the aubergine tastes quite Asian. So if, you know, there's things that we love, we will bring them in and incorporate them how we like.
That is categorically the best mac and cheese I've ever had.
Whoa. And it's cold as well. You wait till it's
unbelievable.
Hot,
the flavour, just so much depth to it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of cheese.
It's amazing.
You've got to put don't be shy on the cheese, and you need to use evaporated milk as well as cow's milk. It's a very important thing.
So during lockdown, you did these brilliant videos called What's for Dinner, Mummy?
Oh,
they're
yeah.
so much fun. It's great. Thank I love it. You. I love the music and just the sort of like, it's just so silly and
you.
It's just great. So how did that come about? What's the...
Well, we were... obviously, I live on the same park as Mum. And when lockdown first started, I just came straight here.
We just became one house.
Yeah, and then we just, you know, we did what everyone did. We were just, like, hermitised. And then as we said, Mum doesn't really ever not. I mean, at that point, she was like, right, let's go in. Let's make some nice food.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was bored and just started filming her. And then one day she was just like, let's call it What's for Dinner, Mummy? And I was like, oh, my God, no. So bad.
Yeah, yeah. And I insisted.
But it was really... It's interesting because we've talked about it a lot recently and actually, because we're going to be doing more. It's quite a question that really speaks to a lot of things. And at that time, yeah. a lot of people weren't with their mums. And I was very lucky to be. And I think it was the most, the only familiar question of the day. It was, you know, what is this virus? But at the end of the day, what's for dinner, Mummy?
Yeah.
And that just kind of brought it back a bit every time.
Food and drink has been such an important thing.
We didn't realise when we were doing it that it had that much, that there were other levels to it. We were just literally bored in the kitchen.
Yeah.
It was like, you have to say it. And I made her say it. And then we just couldn't.
But I think it became a real, like, guiding light for us throughout the whole lockdown process.
We suddenly realised as well, it was like what we call it accidental politics. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And it was like, people have all these weird ideas about how different cultures and they live in different ways. It's like, people are just people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's really good to show, you know, black kind of family life.
Right.
Just as this thing that goes on, like everybody else's family just goes on. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
We're not sitting in at home having deep philosophical chats every 5 minutes. People are like,
you just don't film those, do you?
We're dancing around frying some fish and doing whatever it is that people do. Do you know what I mean?
On which, I saw the Seabream one earlier.
Oh, yes, that's nice.
The one thing that blows my mind, does this sort of blow your mind as well, Makita? The fact you can just go, okay, we need this amount of spice, we need that amount, you'll just spoon it, and it's like, I'm constantly, I'll spoon it out, and I'll turn to my girlfriend and go, is this actually a tablespoon I'm holding? And she'll go, yeah, that's a tablespoon. Okay, I'm never sure, and then I'll gingerly put it in, but you're just like, scoop, 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 and you know. And you're not checking anything, it's just all...
And I think I've learned that from her as well, because I would never measure when I cook, and that's because Mum never really has. And I think it creates a different kind of energy in the food, because you've got... It's your instinct. Mm. Like, I think a bit of this and a little bit of that and about that much of that, it comes from a different place.
So you cook similarly like that, then, do you?
Yeah.
Do you cook your...
I do cook,
You do now?
I do now. I didn't for a long time. I told you about the 20s.
Yeah.
I had all these great flats, all these massive kitchens, Mum, that I didn't use.
I know.
But now, I guess I do cook, and I love mashed potatoes, obviously. Okay, No, I like to make a dal, and I really, I've learned from Mum how to make a banging compote.
Do you find that inevitably it never tastes as good as how your mother
Mum's
makes
food.
It? Yeah,
yeah, big
because
time.
I learned from my mum how to make Indian food, and she learned from her mother, and my grandmother lived with me basically all my life.
Right.
So she taught me how to cook Indian food.
Wow, nice.
And I followed it like down to the teeth.
Wow.
And never, it still but never
do,
can
do you know what they call that in the taste. Caribbean? They call that your hand. So it's like your touch. Yes. So they go, I love your hand. And what they mean is I love the way you create that food. And nobody else can hand in the way that you do.
Talking of hands, my grandmother's hands were so, like, tough.
Grandma's
yeah,
hands.
Like she. So with chapatis and rotis, which she'd put the burner on.
And she would just be
and she'd just do that with it. And they'd always inflate.
Yeah.
And I would
her hands on the chapatis.
She would
just be like that, and they'd always, and they'd go up, and then she'd tap them, and they kind of. Tried to do that, and it is not a good thing. Absolutely not possible.
So that's her hand.
Yeah.
That's her hand.
That's her hand.
Do you find that there's sometimes food is a way of bringing people together?
It's absolutely.
Who might have different opinions.
Absolutely.
Different stuff.
I think always. I mean, to me, it's the great
different
leveler.
Generations.
It's the great leveler, you know, because. You know, that's why the phrase breaking bread exists. What I call it, you know, there's food and there's music. Breaking bread and the drum. These are the two things that human beings started with communicating.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you offer people food. You people move in, you bring them something to eat. It's because it breaks down barriers. It's nourishment, it's love. Mm. It's a little off heart offering from me to you. That's why I'm like, oh my God, it's so cold, it's really upsetting me.
It's
and I know you're fine, but for me, you know, if I'm going to feed you, I want you to have piping hot. I want it to be exactly right because I want it to be how I want
it. But normally you don't sort of record a podcast midway through a meal.
Because we were like, we just got to show love in any way, and that is how my mum shows love, through food.
Right, well, I suppose, that's really interesting. And the ability to sort of supposed to feed a community stomach as well at a point where people are really struggling.
We hadn't thought of that either. I just was like, I need to do something.
Giving love to the community around us, but we were also, as a family, surviving this thing and evolving through it and turning our ideas into actual tangible realities within all this. So it's a very galvanising year. And now that the world is slightly different, that mentality has stayed with us in everything we're doing, and we really are just not so many words now and a lot of action.
So in the kitchen, what kind of, and then probably at home as well, are you, you know, a shouty chef? You're a sort of...
No, not at all. I won't have it. I won't have it. No, no. We don't want bad food.
You wouldn't shout in the kitchen.
No, I don't have shouting in the kitchen. What's that fucking look?
She doesn't shout. She doesn't really want me in there.
Sure.
What's that look?
You don't shout, but you don't want me in there.
No, I'm not talking about you.
The chefs can stay.
Chefs can stay. You can do one.
Well, on that, I mean, let's say we have two people.
Hang on a minute.
Of course. Please don't shout at me.
Hang on, just one minute. It's not true that I don't want you in there. You always say that.
Me
what you
and
don't
Dom
like.
Are always in
no,
your way.
What
in
you
the
hate.
Kitchen.
What you hate is that I know more about something than you do.
No, that's not true.
I'm just going to poke this fire a bit more. Yeah. So what do you think that Makita thinks that she knows more of than you do?
Oh, or generally in life?
About
being tidy and about fashion, style. Look at organised. I'm not even using the right word. Tidy's not the right word. Organised.
Okay, please.
Or I like to call it really anal.
More of an organised person.
Colour-coordinated clothes.
It's funny, in clothes I'm like this. And in the kitchen, my mum's like this.
Yes,
she likes things the way she likes them.
That's
it's her world. But yeah, I'm very organised.
That's very
clothes.
Interesting that you just said you're like that in the boardroom, lying like that in the kitchen. I hadn't thought about it.
Right.
That is very true.
Thank you.
I just have an order in the kitchen.
Okay, interesting.
And things need to be done in a particular type of way because I like things done properly.
I suppose you've sort of assigned your own domains.
Yes.
Like, that's your domain.
Yeah,
and that's
I like
your
things
domain.
Done properly in the kitchen. But in the work kitchen, I won't let people shout. We don't shout in the kitchen at home.
Because, for instance, let's say I'm cooking for two or three friends at home. I'm doing
huge number.
I'm doing two or three dishes, mm-hmm. and I'm already panicking. Basically, how are you managing to? All right. How are you spinning the plates of 50 people waiting? This is happening.
Start early enough. You just got to start early enough. If it's Christmas, I start cooking like 4 days before.
But I mean more when you're running the kitchen here
service. Well, you just get used to it.
Okay, yeah.
You get used to it and you get in a flow. And also, all 50 tables don't come in at the same time. You're you're working three or four tickets at a time or five tickets at a time or whatever.
Yes.
And you have, have different stations. So somebody's on the, side, someone's on the curry, someone's on the...
Okay.
But I have to say, I think that's why I love directing all these What's for Dinner Mummies, where we show this process, because I think there is a lot of stuff that people don't know. Like, service is intense.
Before I
showed it on MasterChef, no one really knew what service was like. It is, and it's that intense.
Completely.
And actually, I see them all have these meetings and we lead up to these amazing restaurants that my parents open. But when it's moving and it's going good, it's like a dance.
It
is.
It's like a gig. Right. And I come from music.
Yes, of course.
So there is a sort of performative element to
it. It's really interesting.
Which I respond to. And at the end of it, it does feel like the end of a gig.
Yeah.
And everything's running out there nice.
So it is a rhythm to it.
Absolutely a rhythm to it. And that's why who you cook with is really important.
Because timing is a problem with me. If I make a roast, it'll sort of emerge like tapas throughout the day. It'll be like carrots will be ready and then chicken will be ready about 2 hours later. Then suddenly the potatoes will emerge. But there's no consistent, this is all coming out at the right at the same point. One thing, obviously, which is particular to this meal.
Yes.
And I wonder if this is going to be one of the things that comes out of lockdown, is meal kits seems to be a big thing.
Yeah.
People who finish the meal. This will be sent, is that right?
And these are actually the last feasting boxes that we're doing. This is the Nyamital box. Yeah. Nyam meaning to eat in Caribbean parlance.
Okay.
So we do an Ital box as well, which is the vegan version. Ital is like the old dread Rasta way of cooking, which is essentially vegan food.
Yes.
So they've been eating vegan in the Caribbean for years and years and years and years, but they call it Ital. The thing about barbecue culture, this is not an advert for them, but we work with Weber.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they want to do, which I love, the reason, because there's loads of people who want to work with you and do all this stuff, and you're like, no, that's awful. But I really like this thing. We've been having this conversation about changing English barbecue culture so that it's not just really terrible burnt sausages and weird salmonella chicken. Please don't kill me with your chicken. So to get people sort of learning how to cook over the embers and to use the edges of the barbecue and to cook slowly. Yeah. You can slow cook on the barbecue. It doesn't have to be so fast.
Yes.
You don't cook in the flame. You cook in the glowing coals, or if you use a gas one. I mean, there's brilliant gas. You just turn it down. People are so purist and weird about barbecues. I've got a whole bunch of gas barbecues, and I've got these smoker boxes.
Okay.
So in the smoker boxes, I can put spices.
Oh, that's
so
wow.
So I put star anise really cool. and cinnamon and
so that smoke the flavour
juniper,
through your meat then?
And that will smoke up and heat up, and that will perfume and aromat the fish or the wow. meat or the vegetables on the barbecue. Also, I'm not a big fan of the hickory or the oak because I think that's very overpowering. So we use cherry wood and apple wood and different woods to cook with
right.
because the impact is very different. I think hickory is really acrid. You know, you get that oak yeah. smoked. It's a bit like
hickory is like the standard American barbecue.
Yeah, and I don't like it.
Taste like
I don't
that,
like
yeah.
it. I thought you can't taste anything. It's just sort
I didn't
of.
Know you were in charge of the wood selection.
Yes,
wood
I think of the detail. All the details.
You'll come home and your kitchen table will be gone. Yeah. It'll be one leg
it works
left.
Very well with the fish that we're done with.
I just no it's all it about yeah. the devil is in the detail. Every right. little part of it is really important. And it's like building blocks. You start what are you cooking with? What yeah. are you cooking it on? And you start from there. And then how are you seasoning? How are you preparing whatever it is? And how long is that going to happen? And then the actual cooking methodology and then the resting or whatever. And then the delivery. So it's like a little journey. It's like a little story. Each thing has a little story. Like the rotis have to sit for enough time for the glutens to develop. And then yeah. you roll it and yeah. all of that. These have got sweet potato in them, do you know what I mean? The curry goat has to sit, the chocolate has to go in right at the very last moment because otherwise it's too bitter, so you put it at the end and it goes silky. You know, there's all... It's all about timing.
I suppose you must get... When the amount of love and care that goes into just creating a food before it's actually cooked...
Yeah.
That it can be quite disappointing if someone then doesn't do it properly.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So
yes.
you kind of want to teach people, or at least get
yeah.
people
yes.
to know how to do it, because then they will then experience it the way it should be experienced.
Yeah, and also just to make a little happy moment for themselves. Food should
yeah.
make you happy.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like sharing that with mm. other people. You know, that's the thing that makes me happy.
100%.
Is sharing that with other people and getting people to have as much fun as we do, basically.
Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Well, this food has just been, it's just amazing. It's just absolutely delicious.
Well, I'm glad you like it.
This will be delivered nationwide, as will the barbecue kit.
These were all delivered nationwide, absolutely.
Will the barbecue kit be
yes,
delivered?
Yes, yeah. yes, yes, yes. I mean, and you know, that's the industry has been incredible in terms of innovating and finding new ways to get food to people and to,
yeah.
to you know, and I'm so impressed with, you know, people like Lisa Goodwin-Allen and Tommy Banks
yeah.
and all the people that, you know, Simon Rogan and all these brilliant people came up with these ideas and ways to get their food out across the country.
There's been some really cool things. Like there's a guy called Willie's Pies, have you heard of
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah.
Who's started sort of delivering he worked in various sort of Michelin-starred
oh, yes,
restaurants.
Looks so
and
good.
He now just
What's
makes...
Willie's Pies?
Like makes 100 pies or something every
yeah.
week.
And, it's
and
like
then at
big...
12 o'clock on a Sunday,
yeah.
they go live and at 12:01 they've all gone, basically.
Yeah. When we have the... Jack Dorn's story, we had the pub up the road, the restaurant in the pub up the road, and we used to do for Sunday lunch. I know that you're good for
yeah, you are.
We used to do £3 extra on the roast, and you would get a feasting dinner,
right?
Which meant that you got unlimited, yes, you heard it right, unlimited roast potatoes,
yeah.
Yorkshire puddings, oh. and gravy.
There's yeah. Who's not paying extra £3?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some dickheads.
Actually, I'm all right on
extra gravy. Whatever,
yeah.
mate.
I don't want extra potatoes. I think my mum's used being a restaurateur. I think she's used that as a way to sort of... I don't know, put into real life all the things she wants as a diner. So
yes.
we always want extra gravy. We always want, we're like,
absolutely.
Why can't you get extra potatoes? And my mum and I love like sauces that come in little jugs.
I couldn't agree more.
I love a little jug. And you know, you're right, because that came about because about a month before we opened there, we went for a roast to some pub and I said, can I get some extra gravy? And they said, no.
Oh, come on.
Which made me really pissed off. And
yeah.
I said, why not? And they said, because the chef has measured it. And I said, tell the chef.
To measure this.
I've got a measurement for him, yeah?
Yeah?
I was so annoyed. I was like, who the fuck measures gravy and why haven't you made extra? I just remember being furious
yeah,
and going,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
when I mean, we open, there will be vats of gravy.
yeah.
And I would, you know, true to my word.
And the worst thing is not having enough. If it's you're waiting for it, it turns out, a meal is not enough.
Yeah. I mean, God, it's like you can have it tomorrow for lunch.
Well, I always say I have it tomorrow for lunch.
But then you don't. And then it's in there. And then 5 days later, you're like, oh, there's those noodles.
Don't want them now. Peeking out behind the ketchup. All right, mate.
But by the third day, you've opened the fridge. They're still there. You should get rid of them.
Because you can't admit that you overruled it. That's why.
The only ones I will bin are the ones that if I see it the next day, I will hate myself. Yeah. So if it's like really big chicken balls or something like that, I go, that has to go for my own sense of self-worth.
You can't wake up with old fried chicken around.
Old burgers.
What was your favourite then?
So my favourite was, I have to say, it probably was the goat curry and the chicken. I loved it all. I loved this coleslaw cut through the chicken so beautifully. Everything was just... Mac and cheese is amazing.
Mac and cheese is your favourite.
It was all amazing.
This was very, very
good. The Escovitch pickle. I love a bit of Escovitch pickle. It's quite interesting, right? Because there are just different ways to be brilliant in the kitchen. And I'm aware that in what they call classic French kitchens, I mean, I do take issue with that term because there's classicism from all culture.
Because they go
classic cooking, and I always go classic French cooking because there's classic Italian cooking, classic African cooking, classic Asian, Indian, you know, there's classicism from all over the world. But there is a sort of cultural arrogance about old, dead French white man cooking, basically. 100%. And, you know, it's good cooking.
Everything's still a sort
it's
of
good cooking. I'm a big fan, but it's not the only way to be brilliant.
And I think
one of the things that's happening in the British food industry at the moment is that things are really opening up through necessity and also through desire from the British palate, because we are everyone. You know, look at this around this table right now. We are all British people with several different shades. But you know, in terms of what British being British means, it just means everything. It's everybody from everywhere. We're a multicultural society, and I think that our food is starting to reflect that at the top end of the spectrum, right down to takeaways. There are many, many ways to be brilliant. There are many, many cultures and flavours that are breaking through. And to me, it's all classicism. Just make it taste good.
Make
it look pretty. and I'm happy. You know what I mean?
It's completely right.
This is amazing.
Amazing. Just what a delight. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure having
thank
you.
Thank you for coming to visit.
Look at me trying to tie up the interview like it's mine.
Loved
We've got two experienced broadcasters.
No, thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy, and you're both
great.
Lovely, lovely people, and this is great food. So
thank you.
Winner.
That was the amazing Andy and Makita Oliver. I mean, I absolutely loved that curry goat dish with the chocolate. So if you have any unlikely ingredient combinations, please send them in. We'd love to hear them.
Don't literally send in the ingredient combinations. Email us about them. Don't send us sort of chickpeas and cinnamon in the post.
Chickpeas and cinnamon is an absolutely lovely combination, Graeme.
Actually, that's an absolute winner. It really is. And if people want to do that, if they want to get in contact and tell us about their weird combinations or their weird stories or anything that's kind of come up in the show they want to talk about, here's how.
You can follow us on Insta on My Favorite Takeaway Podcast, on Twitter on Fav Takeaway Pod, or email us hello@myfavoritetakeawaypodcast.com.
Right, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. If you've enjoyed the show, please do subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you pick up your podcast and spread the word. We want as many people to hear this as possible because we love making it. Next week, we have Ed Gamble, who is a brilliant friend and the host of some podcast we've not heard of or been inspired by at all. Knocking around, isn't it? Anyway, can't wait to see Ed. He's a joy, always. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.